not actually.
Everybody knows cemetery addict, I'm not permitted. But the reasons are interesting, especially the reasons.
Pardon? Not talking about it here.
Even here, they're talking about legalizing, I know. So these are Jewish approach to all these questions, and there are sources in the Torah to suggest why it's not allowed, so it's quite interesting to learn. But we are still on this question that caused a great deal of difficulties and a great rift between modern Zionism, especially the chief rabbinate and the Haredi community in Israel. And that was, I don't know who was, I don't know if Stephen wasn't here. Were you here last week, Stephen?
I don't think so.
No, you were not here. Nor was Ivor here. So the case was a very tragic one, and I'll just tell you very quickly. It's called the case of the Ach ve'Achot. That's how it's known by, if you want to look up, the brother and the sister. The two children were married to, wanted to get married in Israel, but unfortunately they were the children of a woman who had originally married a man in Poland. And that man was not born Jewish, but he claimed that he had been to Beit Din in Poland and had been converted to Judaism. So in the early 50s he went to Aliyah and lived with his wife, that wife. But then he separated from that wife and no get was given. She went on to marry someone else. Nobody asked her. So she got married properly under the jurisdiction of the chief rabbin of the rabbinate in Israel. So she was properly married to the second husband. Lo and behold, she had two more children. But she hadn't received a get. So these children grew up, and in the early 70s, they wanted to get married. They were in the army. So when they came to the Beit Din, it became clear, and partly because their mother herself had made a declaration that these children, not the children of her original husband, the children of the second husband. So the Beit Din in Petah Tikva became investigated the matter, found out that this the first husband had been properly converted, or this is what their decision was, and therefore the children of the second marriage were mamzerim. And there was a great upset because there were soldiers, these two children, and it became a very big issue in Israel because they were not religious, these two siblings, but it was their fault and they had done nothing wrong. Basically, they wanted to get married, which was nothing wrong with that, but they couldn't get married in Israel. So it became a cause célèbre. It came up to the Prime Minister's level, to the Moshe Dayan, who was Defense Minister, and even Golda Meir became involved in this issue. In the meantime, the Beit Din in Petah Tikva had already decided that conversion was valid. Since the conversion was valid, there were mamzerim, it was upheld, and they couldn't get married. But Rav Goren was the rabbi of the army, and he was a Zionist rabbi. He was about to become the chief rabbi. He made a kind of a deal, or he promised to deal with it again, and he became the chief rabbi of Israel. And he, as soon as he became a chief rabbi, he convened quite a large Beit Din of various Dayanim, whom he claimed supported his view, and declared that the original conversion in Poland had not been valid. So it turned out that the first husband was not Jewish. If he wasn't Jewish, she wasn't properly married, that woman. Therefore, the children of the second marriage were not mamzerim. And it was a nice, two nice weddings, day after. But it brought upon Rav Goren a huge amount of wrath by the Haredi community, by the Haredi rabbis, who for various reasons did not agree with his psak. I mean, he wrote a whole book, so did they write books on this issue. And it's clear that the issue was, in a secular society, what to do about Mamzer. I mean, in any case, it's a big problem. But Ram Goren wanted to make it possible for these two young people to get married, which is not surprising. If you are, basically, it's not only a halachic issue, it's an ideological issue, where you stand with respect to a state whose citizens are not by and large religious, and the law of Mamzerut, in any case, is very, very difficult to explain and to implement and to impose, and it's very cruel. It's not a very cruel law. When it affects a particular person. Nevertheless, that's what the Torah says, and it cannot, unless you are reformed, rabbi, you cannot abolish this law. So the question is whether you're allowed to use any means to avoid that law. Rav Goren, he decided to use this method of cancelling the conversion. And now we came up to his reasons. Right. The reasons of the Beit Din Petach Tikva were clear. They had there were witnesses either way. There were witnesses who said that this man was living a relatively traditional life, but others said no, he wasn't. He'd been seen eating pork and so on, and that he'd never been to shul and he couldn't say the Shema and all kinds of things that indicated that he was certainly not a traditional Jew. But that, even that, would not in itself have invalidated the conversion. Mm. That was the problem. But anyway, Rav Goren invalidated, was a chief rabbi, invalidated the conversion. And this is what we're now reading. We read the story last week. That it was such a dangerous situation for Rav Goren. He was the only rabbi of that Beit Din of 12 rabbis whose name was published. Nobody else knew the identity of the other Dayanim, but did not become known, and nobody knows who took that decision. Only Rav Goren, and he had to have police protection because they were so annoyed with him, they were so angry with him that he had made this decision. The Haredi community, there were whole demonstrations against him, and you can read reports. There are still these reports all over the internet. You can find. You'll see. There was a very harsh response to his psak. But let's read how he came to this psak, and I'll try to fill you in. Psak, and you will see the reasons why this was really a difficult case, and it was not clear which way it should go. פסק דינו של הרב גורן פורסם בהרחבה בחוברת שהוציא זמן מה לאחר פרסום ההחלטה. So after his decision, he published, Rav Goren was a very, 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 he was a genius. He was definitely a genius. That's why he became chief rabbi. But he was, first of all, he was a fighter. Secondly, he was really a big Zionist. So he belonged to a different camp from the Haredi. And he was prepared to take them on. Not everybody is prepared to take them on. Not everybody can. But he took them on, and he wasn't prepared. He was prepared to go on his own. You have to be very courageous, but also very arrogant. So he was both. He was extremely arrogant, very quarrelsome. He even quarreled very bitterly with Lord Jacobovitz. Do you remember about it? Oh, yes. You can read the report. He wouldn't talk to Lord Jacobovitz because Lord Jacobovitz, he was a very dovish.
Yes, he politically. Back, didn't
he had very dovish views about Zionism, about Israel.
Yeah.
He wanted always Israel to give in.
That's right.
And give back territory and so on. And Rav Goren was so angry with him.
He did speak to
him. Unbelievably angry. Unbelievably angry. He said that he didn't deserve to be a rabbi, let alone chief rabbi.
Wow.
Yes,
strong stuff.
And he called on the world to ban him.
Oh,
really? He was a very right-wing Zionist rabbi. He was during the Six-Day War, he led the army to the Wailing Wall.
Yeah,
he had the shofar.
There's
a famous picture of him blowing the shofar. Look, he was, in his own way, a great man, but I don't think you can take on everybody like that.
Yeah.
It's terrible to be, for a rabbi to be so quarrelsome.
He believed in his views.
Very, very strong.
All right.
Very strong. Yeah. You can find the defense for it, but he angered a lot of people.
Probably was more important at the time.
Pardon?
Probably was more important at the time.
Yes. Yeah.
In Israel, yes. He parachuted, I remember the famous parachute with the parachutist.
Yes.
Was really
he was a very outstanding
man.
At the time, was the right person.
Yes, for the right place.
For the time.
There's no one like him now.
No one.
Precisely. No one like him. Nobody, no chief rabbi has been like him since. And he was a unique man in the history of Israel. Psak dino shel Rav Goren pursam b'archavah, so he gave his psak and then he published the whole booklet, which I have, because I inherited it from my father had it, but my father objected to this ruling as well. Remember, Rav Goren ta'an ki halacha shebeit, so the first issue, and if you read, I looked up a little bit of what the opposition wrote. The first decision he had to take was whether he was allowed to convene a Beis Din at all and go against an earlier psak. The psak had been given to the conversion of the Dalit, so who is he to appoint another Beis Din to undo what you're not allowed to? In Jewish law, generally, you're not allowed to. But Rav Goren argued that the law that the Beis Din lo yachol livdok achar Beis Din acher enat kefa b'yameinu. So he argued that this din, that one Beis Din cannot be set up to overturn or to examine the decision of another Beis Din was not valid nowadays. And he argued his case in that booklet. Bifrat binyan mamzerut sheshakul edinei nefeshot. Especially when it comes to a law of mamzer, which is, if you read about the history of the attitude to mamzer, you'll see the rabbis write in the Talmud, the rabbis state quite clearly that this is like executing, like an execution. You're executing a person. So it's such a serious case, so important, so significant, that you have to allow someone else to investigate again if there are no inconvertible, if there is evidence or if there is a possibility to get someone out of this predicament of being a mamzer. וכי אין, so רב גורן, this what he argued, וכי אין פסול הלכתי בכך שרק אב בית הדין, שרק בית הדין מזהה עצמו בשמו, והדינים האחרים נותרים אלמונים. Secondly, he also argued that there's no reason for Beit Din to be convened where everybody is anonymous apart from the convener himself. So no one knows to this day who the other Danim were. They were scared. They didn't want to get involved in this sort of bitter controversy, which is not surprising. Most people don't. But so we only know that it was of Goren. But of course there were other Danim in that. Because there are other Zionist rabbis. And the whole issue is divisive because some people have sympathy. It depends on your attitude to Jewish law. How do you view Jewish law and how do you set one case against the other, conversion against Mamzerut, and where your sympathies lie, what your ideology is. Do you want to please the secular elements in Israeli society or you don't care about them? That is the question.
But the law has no feelings. The law has no feelings,
but people do. And
yes,
people
I know.
Also, not people do have feelings. People have ideology. Ideology you do have, and it colors your decision. Because what a religious Zionism is about: making Jewish law acceptable in a secular society, as an Israeli society that's secular until such time that they will all be religious. But it's an ideology that tries as much as possible to make it not to create deliberately hostility towards Jewish law.
Yeah.
Look, if you are if you want to live separately, build a wall around yourself, then okay. So the chilonim, the irreligious elements in Israeli society, will say what they like about the law of Mamzerim, and you don't care. But it's not religious Zionism. That's Haredism. Couldn't care less about the fate of these two people if that's what the law is. Maybe they do care, but I think Jewish law to them is supreme importance that only logic in this strictest sense of the word. I mean, they had logic on their side. Well, the first thing that they objected to was for I've got to convene a Bedin and examine the decision of the Bedin. Even that they didn't agree with.
Yeah.
So they didn't even agree with the process.
Unusual.
Yeah. They didn't, also they didn't agree that you could convene a Bedin and nobody knows who they are.
It's not transparent.
Quite a point to that. You don't know who's ruling with them.
Right.
Yeah. But under Jewish law, just on a sort of a lawyer's note, really, if a Beth Din has made a decision, is there an appealable process?
There's no appeal in Jewish law. There's no appeal. There's only a Supreme Court, but the Torah mentions a Supreme Court in Jerusalem, and you might go to a local court, but the Supreme Court is not a court of appeal. The Supreme Court is there to deal with difficult cases which cannot be decided in a lower court, like the system in the days of Moshe Rabbeinu. Moses himself said, look, he said, Jethro told him to set up courts, so he set up courts and fine, he had courts everywhere,
but he still had
and then he had to adjudicate the very severe cases, but it was not an appeal court, a court of appeal. They just dealt with the difficult cases, and that's why it is in Jewish law. Right now, legufo shel mikre, with respect to the actual case, having dealt with the jurisdiction of the court, so on the matter itself, kavar Rav Goren, Rav Goren decided ki ein edut sheborkovsky itgayer bevedin. He decided that there was no testimony. The man's name was Yoram Borkovsky.
That's a convert.
According to Rav Goren, there was no evidence at all that he had converted at the Bedin. Also, he claimed, "Ein yediot bruot al haofen shebo nimol v'taval." No, were the clear facts known about the way that he had been circumcised and been to mikveh. V'nidvarav udvarav sheniel o achim yudim chasrei shachar. And he also, Rav Goren said, that what he was saying, that he was conducting a traditional way of life, Jewish way of life, was unfounded. Le'or ha'uvdah shelo yada, because if you don't know how to complete the first Shema Yisrael, you really must be very far from tradition, because there are very few born Jews, or even converted Jews, who don't know how to say Shema Yisrael, Hashem Elokeinu, Hashem Echad. Especially if you go to Shul, even a few times, you know this sentence. And Borkovsky didn't know. Even the court at Petach Tikva, he was surprised. He couldn't say Shema Yisrael. So if you can't say the sentence Shema Yisrael, nobody's asking you to do all the three paragraphs, just the sentence. You couldn't do it. That's very strange. I agree, it's very strange. Nor did he know what the Chadodi is. Who would know what the Chadodi is who goes to Friday nights to Shul? So obviously he never goes to Friday nights to Shul. So obviously he wasn't leading a Jewish way of life, even though it was in Israel. But that's possible that many Israelis can't say one word of prayer. Wasif. Wasif. And then Rav Goren said further, Ki Arav Shechiten et Chava Langer, that was the woman's name, actually, I mean, there was a rabbi who married them in Israel. Somebody married
to
the second husband. Yeah. So how come he didn't know about the first
coming and marriage?
So Avgoen said that he knew about the first marriage.
Oh.
Right, that's what Avgoen said. Ach lo yiches lehem chashivut mishum Borkovsky uchzak lo yudi, because he himself thought that Borkovsky and the Chazaka was known to be not Jewish. He was known not to be Jewish. That's why he allowed this woman to get married in the first place at the jurisdiction in Jewish law. So he must have heard this because he was an experienced rabbi. Why would he allow a woman to get married again without making sure that she was not married to someone else? Right. That's his case. Rav Eliashiv, but against him was Rav Eliashiv. We came to it because we were discussing Rav Eliashiv. Rav Eliashiv was the greatest rabbi alive until recently. He died at the age of 102. He was one. He was the recognized authority in Jewish law in the Haredi camp. But you know, on some issues, the Haredim and the religious Zionists are in the same. In the same boat, everybody's religious. So Rav Eliashiv was the leader of Orthodoxy, but Rav Eliashiv he refused to accept these findings. Rav Eliashiv serav lekabel et adim sheborokovsky chay kigoy. The problem was there were two groups of witnesses about this Borkovsky. One group of witnesses, not large group, two people, one person, testified that he was leading a Jewish way of life, and others that he was seen to violate Jewish law big time. So there was no clear evidence there, contradictory evidence. And so Rabbi Yashiv refused to accept the witnesses who said that Borkovsky was living like a goy. Because they themselves, these witnesses who came to say that he was living like a goy, they're themselves sinners. Because they said that they were eating a pig with him. That he was eating it with him. So that witness, he puzzled himself. He invalidated himself by saying, how can you believe him? The other witness who said that he was living like a goy, he said, he testified about himself that he himself had lived in the past with a Christian woman. Right, so Rav Eliashiv didn't want to know about these two witnesses. He invalidated the testimony of these two people. Okay, for fairly good reasons, because they made themselves sinners. They themselves said that they were sinners. So if you say about yourself you're a sinner, then you invalidate yourself.
I mean, whether this guy was living post-marriage isn't necessarily relevant to the validity of his marriage.
Of course, that's also totally true. But
there you go.
Yeah, you're right. The evidence was very confusing. But that's why the court Petach Tikva decided he was Jewish. Al kach anah Rav Goren. But look what Rav Goren said about this invalidation of the witnesses. Al kach anah Rav Goren shal pi halacha. So Rav Goren answered that according to Jewish law, ein adam mesim atzmo rasha. So there's a principle in Jewish law that you find in the Talmud all the time, that a person cannot say by himself that he is wicked, that he is a sinner. If you go to court and say that you are a sinner, you won't be believed. Ein adam mesim atzmo rasha.
Interesting. It's the same.
You can't incriminate yourself.
Self-incrimination, yes.
Yeah. You can't self-incriminate. That's because you might be forced to give evidence against yourself. It's to protect the individual. It's a human right.
Normally not.
Yeah, that's why you're not allowed to. You're not allowed to force people to admit to something. It's got to come from them, not from external pressures. Exactly. So that's Ein Adam. I'm assuming it's Moharsha, it's an important principle. So these people said that they had a pig, we don't believe them. Right. So why do we believe them when they say that Bukovsky had pork? So the answer is the Talmudic klal of Palginan Dibura. Palginan Dibura, you haven't got it very clearly, but it says Palginan Dibura. Palginan Dibura is a Talmudic concept. It means that you divide the evidence. So the evidence that they themselves or that witness had pork, we don't believe him. Don't believe him. Don't believe him. But that Bukovsky had pork, we do believe him. Because Palginan Dibura. Palginan Dibura means that you divide the sentence. Palginan means, Peleg means you divide. Palag means divide. Now, Plukta is, Miflaga is a party in modern Hebrew. Miflaga, you'll hear about the 27 Miflagot in Israel very soon. The Miflaga, Plag, Palag, well, it was in the last week's Sidra. Peleg.
Peleg.
Yeah. Because in his days the world was divided. So he was called Peleg. Laflig actually means also to go by boat because you separate from the land. Plukta is a dispute and Bar Plukta is somebody you argue with. And there are many words connected with this root. Pelach. Pelach is a segment pomegranate, I think Pelach Rimon, segment of,
sure.
Yeah.
Wine orange,
Wine right? Orange as well, yeah. Pelach. So you've got the Pelamet. Pelamet is the, are the letters of division in Hebrew. So Palginan Dibura is a very famous halachic concept. Palginan Dibura. That somebody is speaking, we don't believe what he says by himself, but we do believe what he says about someone else. Aedim enam nemanim lagidra al atzma. The witnesses are not believed to say something bad about themselves. Ulam em nemanim bechelek divrem shebo em edim bignut chaveram. But they are believed when they say about someone else that he has had pork. You're allowed to, for reasons of this kind, you're allowed to testify. Benosaf, but in addition, of Goren claimed, in addition, Nosaf is the same word as Yosef. In addition, Kayamim Edim, because Rachel called him Yosef because she wanted another son. That's the meaning of the word Joseph. Benosav kaimim edim ksherim lechol adeot ameidim sheberkovsky lo yada ketzad itbalel. But in addition, there were witnesses, kosher witnesses, according to everyone, who testified that Bukovsky didn't know how to daven. Because they were watching him in shul, we read it last week. They were watching him in shul and he couldn't say a word. Mitamim ilchatim rabim. הכלל שלפיו אדם יכול לבוא ולהעיד על היותו גר מדין הפה שעשה הוא הפה שהתיר אינו תקף במקרה זה. And so can a person, I mean Bukovsky himself said that he had been a goy but he became a Jew.
But we can't say that.
Right. So can a person say I'm a ger? That's the question. In Israel. So there is another halachic principle. A peshasar wa peshitir. What's a peshasar wa peshitir? I mean, he's saying that he wasn't originally a Jew, so he made himself forbidden. But then he says, but I converted. Makes himself permitted.
Mm-hmm.
So he himself forbade himself. He himself now permits himself. So you believe him on that basis. Because why did he have to say that he was a goy? He didn't have to tell anybody. I mean, you live in Israel, you don't have to tell anybody you were born a goy in Poland. Well, what did you need to tell anybody? So since he told people that he had been born a goy, Now he is allowed to tell people that he's not a guy anymore. And that's a peshasal, a peshitil.
But he's saying that about himself.
Yes, so he's allowed, he's believed.
Before, about a he's person believed. Can't self-incriminate,
Yashiv argued that he's believed. He says he's a gay, he's a girl. A peshasal, a peshitil. That's what Rabbi Yashiv said. If I say I'm a girl, well, I didn't have to say anything. Why do I have to say that I'm a girl? I'm a rabbi of Pinashut. Why do I have to say I'm a girl? To whom? If I say that I'm a girl, then I'm believed. Because why would I want to say that? It's preferable to say that I was born a Jew.
I want to say that because I want to cause my ex-wife a problem.
I know, no, but the Bolkovsky had no interest of that kind.
How do they know?
I don't know whether this came into it, but Rav Yashiv argued,
could it be taken out of context,
that you can say you are a girl. You are believed when you say you are a girl. You are believed. Why not? You are believed. Because why would you want to say it? Much better for you to say, I was born a Jew, and nobody will be able to find out.
So you must have been telling the truth.
Yeah. But Rav Goren argued that this is not valid, this principle, in this instance. Rav Goren argued against it. Why? In the first instance, it isn't valid if some people are saying that he wasn't living like a Jew. So it's already not a peshasal. He is not in such strong ground. Klal zechal, so this klal, this principle, is valid in relation, legabe adam, in relation to person, asher hakol tvurim sheyidei kasher, everybody knows. Everybody thinks he's a kosher Jew. Now he comes and says he's a girl, he's believed. Because everybody thinks he's a Jew. Davar sheno kayam kan, but in the case of Bukovsky, no, everybody thought he was Jewish. And the evidence was not clear cut. Rav Goren Ziyen, odd. Rav Goren came up with another few arguments. Kinosfu mismachim chadashim, that new documents have come to light since the original case in Petach Tikva, which had taken place long before. Shelo ba'u b'fnei batei adin et kluv ha'kodmim. No, not long before, when they wanted to get married, these young people. Which had not come before the Betty. So he claimed to have new evidence, new documents. Lefiem eidu ovdim socialim, ki Bukovsky gedelet b'no beruach hanatzrut. And then came some social workers, according to Rav Goren, and testified that Bukovsky himself, he raised his son as a Christian. Now, these social workers had not testified in Petach Tikva. So, al kol ele osif Rav Goren tamim nosafim. On top of these, Rav Goren added other reasons, המחזקים את פסיקתו, which reinforced his psak, his ruling, שאותם פירש בהרחבה בחוברת, which he explained at great length in his booklet, which is a long, it's a book. So, right, that's it. עוד הביא דעה, שלפיה גם גר שהתגייר כהלכה, אם שב לסורו, הפסיק לקיים מצוות, גירותו בוקע, then he came up with another view, another view in to reinforce the psak, to nail it down, so to speak. He brought a view that we don't follow, but there is such a view that if you are gay, and then later on you don't lead a Jewish life, your gerut is invalidated by your behavior now. So that's a different view. It's a view that's not generally followed, but it's a view in Jewish law.
Very topical at the moment. In what way?
Why do you say that?
Just protecting a number of cases where conversions are being invalidated.
Ah, yes. I think on other grounds, though. I think the conversion, which was invalidated by the based in London, that was a case the Danim thought he was dishonest, this man. I'm sure.
But Israel, there are a whole run of cases where...
Yes, it's reopening of cases. That's right, invalidating. I think, but the main reason now is the claim that they're not sincere conversions. They're not sincere, they're not done properly, they're not done in front of people who checked very carefully the situation, and they were done too wholesale. Because there are Batedanim that want to include. There are people who have come from the Soviet Union. It's a very difficult situation in Israel. There are 500,000 Russian people who want to be Jewish. And they go to the army, and they are Israelis. It's difficult even to tell that they're not Jewish. So there are Batedanim set up by Zionist rabbis, by the Zionist... By the Ministry of Religions and they want to find a way out. They don't want Israeli society to be divided because they're Zionists. Zionist ideology is that everyone living in Israel should be a Jew. The Haredi ideology is that whether you're in Israel or in England, you're living in my West Coin. It doesn't matter where you live. Yeah? It's true, you're not a Zionist. If you're not a Zionist, it means that Israel is like any other country. So if there are 500,000 non-Jews in Israel, so is there. But there are more in England, and you can live in England quite happily. And there are lots of non-Jews here. So there are lots of non-Jews in Israel. So what? Doesn't matter. I think that is the heart. Because the Haredi ideology is that Israel is not a momentous event. The state of Israel is not a momentous event in Jewish history. It has no religious significance. All it is, it's a political entity. So that's why it doesn't matter to them where they live. They go to Israel to learn Torah. But if it's more convenient to live in England and go to Gates, then they go learn there. It doesn't matter where you learn, in Neil or in Gates in Yeshiva, depending which Yeshiva more suits you more. But it's not an ideology.
I understand.
This is where the divide is. It's a serious divide. It's a very serious divide. Anyway, Rav Goren, in order to reinforce his argument, said, look, in the worst case, Bukowski was not a really from Jew. So you can say, for the purpose of allowing the children to get married, it's a good thing to say that he's not gay and leave them alone. It's called tziruf. Tziruf. Tziruf that you get other arguments which have not been accepted in law, but you want to be on the safe side, so you had another argument to cancel his conversion. And you have solved a big problem. This was Rav Goren's view. He wrote it and he allowed it. He allowed them to get married. And we read last week that there was, he did the weddings and invited Sarah Bitachon, Moshe Dayan, and even Golda Meir wrote a nice telegram to congratulate.
But surely.
Because the secular left, the secular elements in Israeli society were pleased that Rav Goren had solved the problem.
But surely a political thing should not have an effect on law.
Didn't say it was a political decision.
No, he didn't say it. The implication is there.
He was clever enough to bring formidable halachic arguments, which they didn't agree with. But first instance, they didn't agree with his convening of the meeting. And having looked. What Bezalel Julti says, the first argument was that he wasn't allowed to convene that meeting in the first place, so and all the other arguments are useless because the meeting already decided. So I'm going to forget about all these decisions. He had no jurisdiction,
the power.
He had no power to overturn the first decision, and Rav Bezalel Gilti read. Rav Bezalel Gilti was the chief rabbi of Yerushalayim, and he was Haredi. I told you why there's never been a success story.
Because they
can't make up. Rav Bezalel Gilti was actually succeeded by someone else, but the last 20 years, there's
not been
a chief rabbi in Yerushalayim. Because they can't decide whom to appoint, a Zionist rabbi or a Haredi rabbi. Because the population of Yerushalayim itself is divided. It's a lot of religious people there.
But you said that they, since this case, that any chief rabbi has Haredi leanings, not Zionist leanings.
No, chief rabbi of Israel.
That's what I said, sorry.
But this is chief rabbi of Yerushalayim.
No, I'm talking about the chief rabbi of Israel.
Yeah, chief rabbi of Israel, they are voted in differently. And since Rav Goren, they've all been...
Haredi inclined.
They've certainly been approved by people like Rav Eliashiv. And nobody whom Rav Eliashiv didn't approve of was appointed.
So the chances of this happening again in the same way are remote, because the rabbinic influence is not there to allow it to happen.
Where?
If you had a similar case today, because of the influence of Rav Eliashiv and others who believe the way he does, you're unlikely to have another approach like Rav Goren.
No, it's unlikely to happen.
Yeah.
And, but there are Zionist rabbis who are fighting the Haredim, but Haredim are gaining ground, it so happens. They're very, very, very strong in their beliefs, and there are more Haredim in Israel than Zionist religious. And the Zionist religious, yeah, there are more Haredim, I'm sure. There are 700,000 Haredim in Israel.
Amongst the religious is the point, not overall. But
yes.
If you're religious, there are more Haredim who are religious than the Zionists.
I think so.
Yeah.
I think there are a lot more. They are so. First of all, they have huge families.
Yes.
Secondly, they hardly lose any children.
Mm.
You look in Gozovin, how many children leave their camp? Hardly any.
Not many.
They remain Orthodox. They are brought up brilliantly. Their systems are good. They're very sincere.
Mm.
Their religion is strong. It's a fortress Judaism.
It's a very strong.
So dedicated to the religion.
Mm.
It's just unbelievable.
Yeah.
I see it around me.
Mm.
Yes.
And also in my family now, Chevy's family, I can see it. It's just a phenomenon how strong they are.
Strong discipline.
But a very, very disciplined world. Very disciplined world. And a good world. It's a kind world. They do a lot of good things. But Jewish law sometimes is just impossible to resolve. These laws are so difficult. Rav Bezalel Gilti gave mechtav lepsak shel Rav Goren. Rav Bezalel Gilti wrote an article in a Pardes. A Pardes was, I don't know if it's still it's still published, but in those days, 30, 40 years ago, it was the editor was Rav Elberg. It was an American publication, a Haredi publication, very strong right wing views, and Bezalel Gilti wrote there. Straight away. הוא כתב שאין בדיות שהגר עבר על עבירות אלו אחרות להפקיע את חזקת הגירות של מורקובסקי. He wrote in his letter that the testimonies that testified that this girl had violated laws, they don't invalidate his conversion, right? Because that's the basic Jewish law. שהרי הוא ידוע בציבור כי גר, everybody knew that he was a girl. עוד כתב, furthermore he wrote, שאסור היה לקבל את העדים, it was forbidden to accept the other witnesses, משום שהדבר היה שלו בפני בעל דין. You couldn't accept these witnesses who were testifying against the man Borkovsky, because Borkovsky himself didn't come to the court. Because Borkovsky himself wasn't interested in this case, and he claimed that he was Jewish. So did his children claim that he was Jewish. He had other children who claimed he was Jewish. Bitkuva ledivrei Rav Goren, he had children from the first wife. Ever know from his wife, I don't know if he remarried. From the woman who left him. אומרת שאין חובה להזכיר את שמות חברי בית דין, הביא הרב זולטי ג'ולטי שזו מחלוקת הפוסקים. And in response to what Rav Goren said, that there is no obligation to mention the names of the Beit Din that took part in the decision, Rav Julti said that this was a machloket poskim, it is something that is subject to dispute amongst the halachic authorities. Ha'im tzarich ha'miud lachtom al psak hadin, whether the minority view can be signed, needs to be signed, and if it's signed, of course, you know who they are. But he said that it's obvious that dayanim have to sign the decision. וציטט המובא כי מעשה בית דין נחשב רק לכזה אם חתומו עליו שלושה הדיינים. And he said that the ma'aseh beit din, a ma'aseh beit din is something that the beit din decides and does and rules, it's going to be signed by at least three dayanim. רב גורן כתב כי כשם שחזקת שלוש שנים מן החזקה, אם אין עם הטענה, כך גם הגר צריך להסביר את האופן שבו נתגייר, אחרת אין לו חזקת גרות. Now, what about Chazaka? This man Borkowski had been living in Israel for a long time, and people thought he was Jewish, so he had a Chazaka. 3 years is a Chazaka. Chazaka means an established fact, by mere fact that it's there. It takes 3 years, and it's a Chazaka. Chazaka is something that's established by itself, because it's because people see it and you live like a Jew and you are a Jew. But by mere fact that you're living as a Jew, you are a Jew, it's Chazaka. But Rav Goren said that Chazaka she'enima ta'ana, Chazaka, which is not accompanied by a real good argument, is not a chazaka. כך אם הגר צריך להסביר, the ger at the very least he has to explain how he became Jewish, because if he can't explain how he became Jewish, this chazaka is invalid.
But he has, because he's...
And he hasn't got a chazaka. You can't have a chazaka which hasn't got a taina. Taina means that you've got to at least explain how you became Jewish. And he couldn't explain properly.
But he said he went in Poland, he went to the Beit
Din. But he couldn't explain, he couldn't have gone, he didn't explain properly how he did it and who did it. He didn't know, he didn't know the names of the dayanim, he didn't have the names of the dayanim, maybe he made a mistake about the mikveh, who knows? He didn't explain himself properly, obviously. So Rav Goren set aside his chazaka as well. הרב ג'ולטי ענה, והרב ג'ולטי ארגיוד, שכאן אין מדובר בטענות משפטיות, אלא בחזקת הנהגה. So Rav Julti said that it's true you've got to bring an argument in court, but he said this was not here, it was not a judicial review of the man's status. It is just a chazaka of hanaga. The chazaka of hanaga means that he had the chazaka that he was a Jew, and he behaved like a Jew. Nothing to do with any arguments that was being brought about. I mean, look, if I argue about whether this field is mine, and I had it for 3 years, but I can't show anything. When I bought it, I don't even know when I bought it. So I can't. You can't have a chazaka which hasn't got at least a reasonable tana, a reasonable argument why it's mine. Good to have a reasonable argument, and then the fact that you held it for 3 years makes it yours. But here, it's a chazaka of, Rav Julti said that in this instance, chazakat hanaga. Hanaga means the way you behave. That's a hanaga. Hanaga is what you do in your daily life, routine. So he was living as a Jew in Israel. So you don't need to prove, you don't need to show how you became Jewish.
It's even less than that. He was known in public as a Jew, as a ger. Not if he behaved as one or didn't behave. That's just a legal thing. Yeah.
He was known as a ger. And he wasn't even, he was not actually arguing about it. And he was not bringing any proofs about it. But Rav Goren, as said, ah, since he wasn't bringing any proofs about it or any arguments to support that, therefore he was not to be recognized. Of Jyoti said, you don't need to be concerned about arguments here. It's just the fact that people knew him as a girl makes him a girl. He's got people have known him for 3 years, more than 3 years, almost 10 years, 20 years.
Yes.
Everybody knew him as a girl. All of a sudden you say he's not a girl. So that was the problem. You see, for the Haredim, the law, I understand why the Haredim were very angry with the law. Understand why? Because Mamzerut is the law of the Torah.
Yeah.
And conversion, how that conversion was carried out, is a matter of the opinion of a Beit Din.
Interpretation
of the events.
Yeah.
And since the events cannot be interpreted absolutely positively one way or another, because there was a dispute and there were two witnesses, this one says this and this one says that, and they couldn't really decide. At the end of the day, it remained a doubtful situation with regard to that man. So you've got a law of the Torah of Mamzerut against the law of conversion, and you've got to be, and there's a tradition to be lenient with Geirim. So to be lenient with Geirim means to recognize his Geirut in the case of doubt. So you recognize his Geirut and you're stuck with Mamzerut. And it's clear that had it not been a humanitarian issue, the case would have been definitely decided in favor of the girl.
Yes.
I mean, what Rav Goren did was to say to Borokovsky, look, you live in Israel, you might be in Israel, you're not Jew, I'm very sorry to tell you. So the Haredim didn't think you could do that. The logic actually is more on their side than Rav Goren.
Rav
Goren wanted to do his best for those Mamzerim and to bring peace to Israeli society. Because it was a very divisive case.
What Mamzerim? Are we not Mamzerim?
Pardon? So very they were so annoyed with Rav Goren, they never forgave him, as I said last week. There's a whole essay about their reaction to his psak. He was a chief rabbi and they did get married, but they never recognized his Beit Din again. They never wanted to have anything to do with him and until the end of his life. And then they made sure that they would get the chief rabbi who would be one of them.
Because where else is he going to lead them?
Do you happen to know when the saying in Israel they used to say, Kashe kesapachat, kesap.
Gerim, Kashim, Kesapachat. This was one of you. In Talmudic time, there were different views about whether Gerim were good for Israel or not. It depends.
Kashet, very difficult for Israel.
Very difficult. Gerim are difficult for Israel. And it can be understood a number of ways. One way is very negative, that it's better that we don't have any proselytes. Another view is that it's actually complementary to Gerim. They're so good in keeping the law that they put us on the defensive. In other words, established Jews keep the law less well than Gerim. So Gerim put us to shame. That's another view. But I think in ancient times, like in modern times, there was suspicion of Gerim, and they were not always welcome. And to this day, Gerim are not that. Some people even in Pinna community, believe it or not, don't like Gerim, don't like converts. Never believe that anybody can convert. Some people have got this primitive idea that that you can't change like that. And I've heard it with my own ear. Members of this shul have said it to me. And that's not a religious view. No, I laugh at you.
No.
Not a laughing view, but people feel it. They feel it.
It's not a laughing view.
No. The halacha says that once a person has been accepted as a ger, he's like any other Jew, and you mustn't even remind him that he's a ger. You must treat him well, and you must be completely accepting of him. But the popular attitudes are not always the same as official attitudes.
Of course.
People are suspicious. And some gerim do us no good. They really they go back on their word. They don't do what they promised. become different after a few years, and people tend to, when towards the end of their lives, they tend to go back to childhood memories and childhood habits and even to where they lived before they became Jews, and we've seen it in Inpin as well. So it's not all very rosy. It's not completely satisfactory. But we're all human beings, and the people might be very sincere at the time, and later their circumstances change.
Yeah.
But they're still gay.
That's life.
Yeah.